Welcome to the At YouTube Podcast, episode number 67, where we talk all things U2, album news, tour dates, and new music videos as they come out the day that we record. From the staff of atu2.com, I'm Chris. I'm joined by Matt McGee. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
I'm well. It's a new U2 music video day, so it can't be all bad.
That's right, exactly.
Unless you're a really, really pissy U2 fan who doesn't like the video, I guess. But we'll get to that. We're also joined, if you're watching the video version, you're already seeing, we've got three guests today, which is a first, I think, in the virtual At U2 podcast studios, as it were. Along the bottom there from my left, I think, I've got Scott. Hello, Scott.
Hey, how you doing? Lovely to be here.
Thanks for being here. And Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hello, guys.
And Eels.
Hi, everybody.
So they make up 3/4, if I got the number right, of the band December, right? We're just missing, Nick, right?
We are, yeah. We have a number of different lineups for different purposes. Okay. So we're pretty much the live lineup at the moment.
Gotcha.
Three of us. Yeah. And yeah.
Okay. And you've got your underworld where Terry plays keyboards and stuff, I assume. That's
exactly.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, so we're going to be talking to them about their album, forthcoming album, depending on when you listen to this, I guess. As we record it anyways, it's September 27th, so in 3 days, if I've got my math right, their album 33 will be released to the world officially, and we'll get into all that. But first of all, just by way of what happened today, I guess the band released... U2, the band, released their official video for the year, The Best Thing About Me. And Matt, I don't know, did you have a chance to watch it today, or were you too preoccupied?
Oh, I did have a chance to watch it a couple times today. I was actually preoccupied at first, but yeah, I think it's a lot of the discussion on Twitter is that it's kind of not what we expected, because it's not really so much a video about Ali and about, you know, a relationship and all that sort of stuff. It's more of a tourist video of New York City, I guess, is kind of, wouldn't you describe it that way?
That's what it felt a little bit like. I, in our Slack, where we were going back and forth and on Twitter too, is kind of described as like, you two had 3 hours to kill on a night in New York. They're going to be on Jimmy Fallon or whatever. So let's fit in a music video and hit the high spots of New York, pizza, the Statue of Liberty, you know, and riding on top of a bus. And so, yeah, it felt a little throwaway in that sense, but there is a lot of, I guess, more going on there maybe than I was willing to give it credit for at first. So lots of U2 fans helpfully filled me in with other possible interpretations. How about for you, Scott, across the pond, what are your thoughts?
Well, I only watched it, I've only had time to watch it once, and I was watching it in the supermarket car park while I was waiting to go in to get some, as you guys would say, groceries. And I thought it was, yeah, kind of throwaway, kind of fun. I didn't see any of the stuff that was supposed to have been filmed in Croke Park in Amsterdam or wherever. I thought it was really not much in it to remark about, to be honest. I didn't think it was really related to the song much at all. But hey, it's fun. It's you two playing the track and hanging out in New York. What's not to like? Mm-hmm. But I guess it was what we expected is probably the immediate reaction. And it may grow on me.
Yeah, I think, and that's the underlying thing is that they're just having fun, and it's good fun that way. So you can't complain too much. They're not looking all sad and pissed off that they're in a big mega band or anything. So that's nice to see.
How annoying.
Fun. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But and Matt, you'd, I don't know if there's like anything official, but you had said maybe there's another video coming that with some of that other footage that.
Well, yeah. Well, as Scott was just saying, right? There was the Amsterdam show when the girl was up on stage, and that was supposedly a video shoot, and so it has nothing about that. As Scott was suggesting, it kind of suggests that maybe there's still more to come.
Yeah, a la One, et cetera, where they have multiple videos versions or whatever. It definitely seems like an American focused campaign. Speaking as a Canadian, and maybe you guys. Scotland, outside of the U.S., anyways, can sort of feel that too. It doesn't feel like it's maybe a pitch of like, hey, America, you're great. You're so good. Why are you abandoning the whatever is good about you in the past or whatever with what's going on? If that's your political slant anyways, but yeah,
possibly. I mean, I hope they do come back with some of the other footage. That sounded pretty interesting. And there was talk of the girl wearing a leather jacket in Amsterdam with you know, the little things are easy to destroy in the back. And I thought that was pretty, that could have been really impactful done in the right way. Yeah. So hopefully we'll see some of that. Mm-hmm. Sounds pretty cool.
Maybe that gets timed. Maybe they release that like to coincide when they get to South America in a couple of weeks. I don't know.
Yeah.
More of the using the broad strokes generalization of the American audience. North American audience can't handle creative imagery, so they'll save that for the rest of the world. Send Matt your hate tweets or whatever. No. Sometimes they do get gun shy, though, I think, in being a little too like artsy creative with certain audiences anyways, it seems like sometimes. But yeah, we'll see what else is to come. So and by way of the Ask At You Too question, which you can, in our inbox, you can send in questions through Twitter and stuff through using the hashtag Ask At You Too. And we have some stuff that we'll get to with the band with December, but just one interesting one that I saw that came in, I think it was a little while ago, maybe already, but at SPPS Arnold asked, what do people think is the best intro song You Too has gone on stage to? And I didn't prep you guys here to give you some thoughts about what it might be. And so I'll go first, I guess, and then we can go from there. But I still feel like I like, in terms of getting excited for the show, I go back to Pop and their own kind of song remix, I guess, in a way of pop music as kind of a fun, I don't know if it's the best, but the most interesting or fun way to sort of start a U2 show was for me. And, if you guys, we've lost Paul, I think we'll try and get him back on here, but I'm sure they're all physically in the same house. So we know he's there. He's live, right?
Come and join us.
his camera has disappeared. But, Matt, any thoughts on,
it's intro. Cause I was thinking like opening song of the concert, but you're saying,
well, they say go on stage too. I guess, yeah, it could go either way. I don't know. I was thinking just like walked out stage.
Intro song. Okay, so that's intro song. Oh, wow. I was thinking opening song of the concert, so I'd have to sort of calculate. What song didn't they go on for Elevation? Didn't they go on to like All You Need Is Love? I think that's what it was. It was a Beatles song. I think that's what it was, and I remember really enjoying that.
Okay. Yeah, if you're not
and pop, and I'm with you too. The pop music for pop was a great intro song as well.
It's okay if you're not a U2 song nerd like some of the At U2 staff. I'm not really. That's why I went with the obvious one that sort of first came to mind. So, how about you, Scott? You look like you're pontificating there, but
I love this tour. The Hole of the Moon is a big song in our lives, and the Waterboys are a huge band for us. So when we heard that they'd shifted in the Joshua Tree tour from the Pogue song to the Hole of the Moon, which they seemed to do pretty mm-hmm. early on, that was exciting. And we caught the show in Dublin this year. So we were in the heart of Dublin listening to the Waterboys and seeing you two walk onto that. So that was pretty special. But I mean, pop music was an incredible intro. The one tour, I mean, I didn't get to, I was a little young, I think we were all, although we're pretty vintage now, we were too young to get to the Unforgettable Fire tour, and weren't they coming on or going off to the Clannad song at that time? I can't remember if they were coming on or going off to Harry's game, which was just pure atmosphere, and that would have been interesting instead of a huge... huge, gigantic, rouse the crowd kind of opener.
So we got Paul back. I don't know if, Paul, if you heard the question originally.
Yay!
Your favorite song that U2 has come out to, walked out to, is what we're interpreting the question as anyways, not their opening song. But how about you, Eels, while Paul thinks with...
Well, Scott stole my answer. It genuinely was the Waterboys. That was a biggie for me. And to hear it in Croke Park was just amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that just meant loads. And I've got a rubbish memory, so I know you guys have all got encyclopedic memories and everything, but, you know, when I'm in it, and I, Scott's my memory, usually we just ask him all the questions and the answers are.
With the risk of only choosing the latter ones, I like people have the power.
Mm.
That was a good one.
I really like that.
Yeah. Chat room is saying Kenny Single Noir is saying Love Space Oddity preceded by Soon, and Fabiano is saying Arcade Fire intro, which was another good one actually. That was when I was at, which would be fun. Yeah. Elevation Remix, The Fave Walkout. War Tour finished with Clannad is what Kenny is saying. Oh, Unforgettable Fire was 4th of July, he thinks. So they also have the benefit of Googling and database searching on stuff. Yeah, so don't give yourself too hard a time there, Eels.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. There's some of us on staff who aren't here right now who do have that kind of photographic memory. I don't think Matt and I are either of those two. So don't feel too bad. So... That was the one question for. So yeah, if you want to send in a question or comment for the show, you can use hashtag AskAtU2, and we'll grab those and try and work them into future episodes as it fits, I guess, and where we're at. So, but for our sort of roundtable discussion, we wanted to have these guys on because their album's coming out soon, and you should all go buy it. I guess first of all, that's obvious. We're not just being paid to say that because they did give us buckets of money, but the album is still good.
Really? So,
they sent it to me. I don't know. Maybe you didn't get that shipment. It's all, yeah.
We'd like it back now, thanks.
You have to wait for the review first, and then. But no, I thought before we get into the discussion, I thought Matt actually had you guys quoted him wherever it was on Twitter and stuff like that. But I thought Matt's review actually hit it best for what my thoughts were after hearing. I heard the songs originally, this couple that you teased, and then the listening to the whole album even this morning here. Matt, I don't know if you remember what you said.
I do remember what I said.
And what was that? I'm trying to lead you into the...
I said it's... The thing that struck me as I was listening is that it's these... The songs, they're like... They're so familiar to you, and we've heard these songs hundreds and thousands of times, maybe. And yet, these guys have managed to make it sound new. And I think that's... I mean, that's... Like, that's not what you typically hear when you hear covers of U2 songs. It's like, oh, yeah, that sounds like a cover of a U2 song. But very few of these songs sound like a cover of a U2 song. And so that's what I thought that was pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. Having played one time in a U2 cover band, a guitarist in a U2 cover band for one night only, and knowing the fear of putting that music out there to U2 fans who are among the most, I don't know, critical and discerning, and obviously have the very similar taste to you and all that kind of stuff. There's a bit of a nervous in doing something like that. And that was just one time on a live thing before there were cell phones everywhere. So I didn't have to worry about anybody else hearing it. But yeah, you guys, I think, knocked it out of the park in terms of the whole album as a collection and songs individually and sort of your interpretation. And of course, there's going to be some that people are not as happy with because it's their favorite song. And how would you ever stomp on or walk on U2's territory there or whatever? And that's going to happen.
Exactly.
But in terms of if you're willing to give someone other than Bono a chance to sing and et cetera, it's an awesome album. So just by way of, I guess, introduction to the band, what brought you guys together even before this project? I'm assuming you were sort of collectively a thing before 33 came around.
Yeah, I mean, the three of us really grew up together. We've been doing music together in bands for at least 20 years and, putting stuff out, releasing independently over here and in the UK. We went through a couple of years when we signed a record deal back in 2004. That didn't go well, and we had to regroup after that a little. And it's interesting, Chris, because if you told us even 3-4 years ago that we'd be covering U2, we'd have laughed because we've spent the last 20 years saying you never cover U2. You just don't do it. You can't do it justice. It's holy ground. It's we don't want to mess with that precious material, and it just kind of happened organically, really, for us. After we put out the Alison Stewart song, it just felt the time was maybe right to experiment a little with some U2 covers, and one thing led to another, and we ended up here with a 10-song album. But we totally get the reaction, which is, guys, what are you doing? You don't cover U2. We understand that reaction. But I guess, and Paul and Ailes can maybe add to this, but it felt like something we had to do at this stage in our lives as a genuine thank you to U2. It really did. And Matt, you've no idea how much your review means to us, mate. It really means a lot, and your support from the start of our journey. You know, it would have been easy for you guys to have been cynical about us, but you never were. You just were genuine and supportive and kind, and we it means so much. So thank you. We'll go away having released this album, knowing that, you know, Matt McGee said it was good. And honestly, that's...
You don't know which other album songs he listens to. I know his other bands, and I don't know if you should give him... No.
I'll be honest. I was a little skeptical at first because we get, like, a lot of people will send us emails. Like, you know, all the people that, you know, they do a cover and they put it on YouTube, yeah, right? And it's, you know, and then they send us an email. Hey, listen to my... And so, you know, this has been going on for years. And so, like, a lot of them are not really great. And I say there's that with love passion. In my heart.
Yeah, there's lots of passion there.
Yeah, the passion. And so, yeah, so, you know, but, you know, you guys, like, I think Chris said it right. You guys hit it out of the park. So I was, yeah, I was a little worried when I first started clicking to listen. I was like, okay, this is going to be this good. This is good. This is good. Well done. So.
You.
Thank you.
Thank goodness. Woo.
That's the woohoo we were just talking about.
Yeah, we should talk about that. That's there's a story about the woohoo. We were talking, Chris was saying about the woohoos in Bad, and I while you were departed, I was saying that you found Bad probably the most challenging vocal because of what the song means to you and all that. So
yeah, what was it like recording that?
Daunting to say the least. So what you were saying away back at the beginning of the chat when you'd said, well, I think Matt was saying that he listened to it and thought, what's this going to sound like? I felt exactly the same about the album. I said it wasn't a good idea. We really shouldn't be covering U2. It's a kind of no-go. But then we get talked into it. So recording Bad, Ultraviolet, these songs, all for me was a major deal. Actually, it was quite emotional in the studio, recording Bad especially, because the lights were out, we kind of tried to get the atmosphere going, and but just that song personally has probably seen me through quite a lot of phases in my life, and it just meant loads. But when it got to the bit, it's quite a range. Bono makes singing look very easy, and the songs that they write, they are not easy to sing. They might be playing copy edge parts and all that, but to sing them, it's just on another level, and I don't know how he does it all the time. But when it got to the woohoo bits, I did sound like an owl, and I was like, it was pretty bad, and I'm just kept walking about going woohoo, woohoo. So it was a bit, I thought, nah, that's going to sound utter rubbish. But studio is a wonderful thing, and technology is amazing. I'm sure it went through the auto-tuner quite a few times before it actually sounded like a melodic.
She broke auto-tune.
I think I was listening to it just while I was making some coffee again before we recorded, and had it playing in the kitchen here or whatever. And yeah, it's, I think, like I said earlier, you guys nailed that. In terms of a different interpretation that is still really good. And I love the idea of acoustic versions of big anthemic kind of songs, which you did a few of those on this album, which is, I think, almost like you have to kind of go the other, if you're not going to do an exact replica, you almost have to do like the other extreme of what the song is like, so that you kind of get out of the U2 fan who's heard that song 6,000 times, you know, out of their head or whatever. Which, another one like that for me was, I think, Matt, you were saying the same thing, was Who's Gonna Ride Your Wild Horses too, where using a bit of a sequencer backing track, when kind of the obvious choice would be just like an acoustic-y version. I think there's a B-side with, I forget what the remix version of it was called, but the Temple Bar remix or one of them, but with just like a straight up acoustic version. And yeah, so it just kind of, it works, I guess. And it's just a nice way to hear, reinterpret those songs.
Well, what I would like, I don't know whoever wants to talk, maybe all three of you or whoever. But like when you're discussing how you're going to do the song, like talk about how you decide, how do I want to phrase this? How do you decide how true do you want to be to the song versus how far different do you want to be from the song? Because some of them are a little more true to the original. And then some of them, as Chris was just saying, as you guys have said, it's like a totally different take. So how do you decide on that?
I'll take that one.
Yeah.
I think, again, it's mostly an organic thing where the three of us will be together. Scott will play a song. Aileen will then, you know, start to sing. I think at that stage, we kind of feel, where is it going to go? Is it going to be truer to the original? Or will it be something that we'll strip back? It's mostly just at the start where Scott will say, what about this song? Where do we think it's going to go? I'm struggling to hear myself, sorry. Guys, sorry.
We can hear you, so you're all good. But yeah.
Okay. And from that point, we'll then say, right, okay, I think this one will stay low-key, this one will stay acoustic. The Wild Horses song, which is probably my favourite on the album, that was always going to be a bigger interpretation of the song and try and be closer to the original. I don't think that was one we felt we wanted to strip back, because it needs to be up there as a song that feels it needs to be in the range and that zone.
Yeah, that's one of the ones, that's an interesting one, where you don't have a lot of live references from U2 playing it. Again, we don't have I don't have the database in front of me. I don't know how many times it's been played live, but it's certainly not in the as far as U2 canon, up there in terms of number of song times it's been played live or reference points that U2 fans have for it as a live album, but or live song. But yeah, it's definitely a fun interpretation that you guys did. Any others, Matt, that you wanted to sort of call out as particular songs that jumped out at you?
Yeah, because Chris and I both made some notes in our doc about it. And the one note that kind of stands out to me is that I wrote that Promenade, to me, sounds like it could almost fit on the Passengers album, because you have some really interesting, like crazy sonic, yes. I don't know the right terms to use, but it just has these sounds in there that are so unique and crazy, and I love it. So yeah, that one to me stands out.
Wow. Yeah, thank you, Matt. That's that's another one of those really precious ones, in it, isn't it? That you go out with real kid gloves. But Ailes and I have really just loved that song for as long as we've loved you too, and that was one that we really wanted to do. And to go back to your earlier question, how do you decide how to do them? It's quite a quick process, really, and it's almost really instinctive feeling of how they should be done, whether they should be big or in the middle or stripped right back. And we normally get to a decision quite quickly, actually, which is nice. But Promenade, we had great help from Graham, and it's an interesting one because he did a drum part for that, which was then converted into a kind of rhythmic synth thing in the studio, and it was a real creative studio song, which was lovely to be part of. But we owe Graham big time for the original drum part that was melded then into by our producer, really, into a landscape that we felt comfortable with. And on top of that, we put some acoustic guitar and some electric guitar and a little bit of piano and things, and ended up something that, yeah, I guess we still have some nervousness about it, but we feel confident putting that into the world, and hopefully others will feel the same that you do. But
were there any songs that you did like the first time and you thought, no, this is either too different and we need to dial it back so it's more recognizable? Or were there any, the vice versa was true, where you did it the first time and you're like, oh, it sounds too much like U2, let's be more different?
I think for me, I think all the versions, I think you get away with a lot when you've got an an opposite sex singer, don't you? When a band that you used to get a male singer and then suddenly you put a female voice into it. But for me anyway, Ultraviolet was probably, that's my favourite U2 song of all time. And
yeah,
that was a biggie for me. But I had it in my head that it was going to be pretty much like the original. Again, why would you want to veer far away from that at all? But when it came out, and that was a studio decision that it was going to be acoustic, and again, I was kind of vetoed. I was really against it, and I thought it sounded ridiculous acoustic. But we just worked on it, and that's the way it ended. So, but that was a bit of a surprise for me, because I didn't think it would stray too far from the original song, to be honest.
I don't think any of the songs sound like they did when you're going through the studio process, because it's like standing in the lobby in the Empire State and trying to appreciate the building.
Mm-hmm. We can hear the echo version of what Paul's saying. This is like just getting the delay of Edge, not the original, but just the echoes of delay of Bad or something we're getting. Sorry, Paul. I know we can hear the spirit of what you're saying, I guess. I was going to ask, on Matt had referenced a sort of homecoming earlier, and just from if I can be guitar nerd for a second, what kind of acoustic did you play on there, and how did you mic/record it for that one? Because it sounds really, just really good. And I don't know if you remember, whatever, that was a while ago, I guess, before you recorded it.
No, it was a Gibson Hummingbird that I played through that, and it was in the studio. It's, as you probably know, Chris, it's DI'd and mic'd. And pretty simply done. I remember that one, we first tried that in our living room the week before we recorded it, because it was, quite a fast process. Alice and Stuart had just gone out. The U2 world had been really responsive to it. We were going to Dublin to see the I&E tour, and we kind of thought, let's try something and see how it sounds. And there was something really beautiful about just hearing it on an acoustic guitar and with a kind of atmospheric backing track. So and it worked in the studio as well. That was just a good Gibson acoustic, and DI'd.
I'm always just jealous of good, nice sounding tone on a guitar. That's what it comes down to, I guess. It's like there's got to be some secret that I'm not getting, but I know it's
I'm not jealous of anyone that can play guitar, that can play piano, that can sing, that can do anything.
Me too.
Oh, you have a beautiful voice. You stop that.
Yeah. So talk us, I guess, in launching the album, you've got an event on the 30th in Glasgow, right? And so how can folks sort of, if they want to get the music, if they want to take part in this, if they want to help promote it, if they want to, all that kind of stuff. What's the marketing pitch, I guess, as it were, here before the computer crashes?
Yeah,
again?
Well, the CD and vinyl have been available for pre-order for a while on our Music Glue site, which is musicglue.com/December, and you can order the hard copy there. From Saturday, the album will be everywhere digitally, apart from those few countries where it's really tricky to license for. And sorry, Chris, Canada's one of those for some strange reason. So grab yourself a United States, an iTunes store membership, and you're good to go. So it'll be everywhere pretty much from Saturday. And we'd just love to help. If people could help share it and on Twitter and Facebook and just get the word out, and that would be great. I should say, we're not a band that makes money. You know, we're self-funded. We independently release. The best we ever hope for is to make some money back that helps fund the next project. Just in case anyone thinks we're in any danger of making any money or profit, it just doesn't happen. It has never happened. And
never.
We strive to be an enterprise that can be self-sustaining, and that has so far eluded us. But we hope that one day it will happen. It's a tremendous privilege to be putting this out, and we've had a lot of love from the U2 world, and we will were overwhelmed with the kindness of it, to be quite honest. Overwhelmed with the kindness. People all over the world have been, you know, got in touch, bought vinyl, bought CDs, and that this whole process has led to us making, we've made so many friends out of it. It's just been really touching, and it's an amazing, amazing community.
And so, you guys are going down to South America, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Ailes, you want to talk about that? If
you're still there. Can you hear me? Hello, hello?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so we've got a wee trip coming up to Brazil, Sao Paulo, and the guys at YouTube Brazil put it all together, and with the help of some friends back here, it's all happening. So we're really excited about that. It's probably the furthest any of us, Paul, furthest you've travelled, maybe?
Definitely.
So yeah, it's still a wee bit bemused by the whole thing. No idea why. However, we're going and we're taking it, and I'm really looking forward to it. I think I've heard, I mean, we've never seen you two playing in South America, but I've heard, you know, these guys are up for a bit of a party, so I'm looking forward to it, and I think it'll be awesome. And just thanks to the guys in Brazil, it really is a major honour for us to come and play, and we're getting to see the show as well through our friend Mariana and Andy, so we're just thoroughly looking forward to it. So why don't you guys come and you can join me?
Hey, if anybody wants to bring the podcast,
you're very welcome. Yeah,
I think if there's any money in music, there's even less in podcasting. So
yeah, we're not going to be there for the same reason that we haven't figured out how to make money either. So.
Yeah, nobody's asking us to come do live shows of the podcast in Brazil yet. So, but Fabiano in the chat room says we're happy to see them here play live. So, great. Yeah, one day. Yeah.
Well, can we say thanks to Fabiano, because he was one of the key players in getting us there, and also Armando Jr. of YouTube Brazil. These guys have been a pleasure to meet and deal with, and they've been generous, and they've funded the trip. With all the expenses we've had this year with the album and travel and everything, we were just tapped out and couldn't afford to front up the cost. Mm-hmm. So the YouTube Brazil are going to be funding it from ticket sales and the event, and two of our friends have bought into the trip and have paid for it up front for us. So it's been a wonderful experience to be the recipients of such grace and generosity, and we'll just never forget it. And it's all through you two and their community, and you know, just a real gift. So we're just going to try and do our best and enjoy being in Brazil.
So you're playing any date for the show, do you know offhand what it is?
It's the 20th, Friday the 20th, in a place called Cine Joia in Sao Paulo. It looks like a great venue, a huge stage and a huge video screen behind the stage, actually. So that'll be good to get a chance to play around with some of that stuff. But yeah, definitely looking forward to it. And of course, we have our launch of the album in Glasgow on Saturday, as you mentioned, Chris, on the 30th, which of course is almost 33 years to the day that you two launched The Unforgettable Fire back in 1984.
Nicely done.
One of the connections.
See that? Yeah.
Do you like that little segue?
So smooth.
Yeah.
One common question I know a few people have asked on Twitter and stuff in our Ask at U2 thing is, do you have any sense of whether the band, U2, the band, has heard the music or seen the videos or anything like that?
That's a touchy subject.
Oh.
It's not a touchy subject.
We live in wonderment.
The answer is no, but we would love to know as U2 fans, but we don't think we ever will. But we did this to say thank you. And what last year when we played Dublin for the first time, Chris Ailes said to me, you know, you've said what you came to say after that gig, and she was right. And although by that time we had said what we came to say, we feel that I kind of feel that this album very much kind of, it's all about that, saying what you came to say while you've still got time in your life to say it. and you two for us have been defining completely from the mid-80s onwards, and whether or not they ever hear it is now irrelevant. It's just been about us saying thank you in the way that we can. You know, so if some fans go to Windmill Lane and the Joshua Tree and they write things and they put their graffiti up, and one way that we've tried to explain this is this is a way that we express our thanks through, you know, writing a song and reinterpreting some songs. It's a bit like, you know, making the pilgrimage to Dublin and writing your love on the wall, just that we do it through instruments and through a studio and making a record, you know?
Yeah. No, that's exactly that. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been asked, you know, over the years, you know, why did you start a YouTube website? Why do you still do a YouTube website after 20? And I've always said, it's how I express my fandom, and that everybody needs a different way to express that. And you guys have your way, and you did a great job. So,
yeah.
Amen. Thumbs up.
You too. You guys too. It's awesome what you do. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like, kingdom. Totally, Matt. Totally. You've been doing this since, is it 1995 or 7, was it? Or 1995 you started?
95, yeah.
95. It's incredible. We're so grateful for everything that you guys do. You know, it's a complete service to the YouTube world and fan community. And yeah, absolutely brilliant.
And if we ever make any money, then we'll send some your way. We'll help you out, guys. We'll help you out.
And vice versa. Yeah. How about that? Well, that's a deal. Yeah.
Other than the buckets of money you sent me, I'm not saying that back. But yeah, I agree. I agree with this.
Which great album. We're getting back, though, right? We are getting that back.
It's Canadian currency, so it's not worth as much. But no. All right, so where folks can follow, find you, I think it was twitter.com/tilldecember, T-I-L-L, right? If I don't have it in front of me, but...
That's two L's, yep.
Yeah, and then facebook.com/december something?
December 1985.
Yeah, I knew there was something else on there. And we'll have links to where you can buy the album and stuff but, in the show notes, which you can find online if you're not seeing it already in your podcast player, goodstuff.fm/ATU2/67. I think this is episode 67. Yeah. I'm sure we'll post something about it when it goes live September 30th. You said like on streaming services and digital where available, I guess, right? Where
that's right. Yeah.
Other than Canada. Yeah. So Canada. I won't take it personally.
Do you know, Chris, it's awful about Canada because we've got so many, you know, firm friends and fans of the band in Canada. And they all have to ship in CDs and vinyl as opposed to being able to grab it on iTunes. So it's a real shame, but it's just so convoluted and expensive to do it.
I'll send a note over to Trudeau to see if we can get that sorted for you. But
yeah, please.
You can follow us. Yeah, you two folks, twitter.com/ATU2, facebook.com/ATU2com, instagram.com/ATU2com as well. If you guys have your solo outside the band, Twitter, social, whatever that you want to hand out, we've lost Paul. I don't know if Paul can still hear us, but starting with Scott, then Paul, then Eels. Scott, where can folks follow you or find you?
I think on Twitter I'm Scott from December. So I'm afraid...
That's so he remembers who he is.
I'm just Paul Ferry.
Paul's here.
Paul is P-A-U-L-F-E-R-R-I-E. Paul Ferry.
And he is?
And I'm actually under a homecominginteriors.co.uk, actually. Homecoming Interiors.
All right.
You can find me in there.
But you don't...
And if you want anything done in your house, then give me a phone.
So if you want some Bono or Bad inspired woohoos along with interior design,
exactly.
Deals is who you get in touch with. All right.
If you want some U2 albums and frames, I'm your man.
And Matt is at Matt McGee. I'm at iChris on Twitter. And thank you all for listening. Thanks for the folks who tried to stick with us through the video stream. I know it was dropping in and out at various times. Apologies for that. But we had a great time chatting with folks from December. What's the band's name? Where does that come from? It's not very SEO friendly, I'll say.
The Water Boys, actually.
Okay.
Scott, you take it.
The Water Boys had a song on their first album called December, which is one of the most poetic, wonderful songs you will ever hear. And when we were starting December many, many years ago, we were looking for a name, and we were listening to the Waterboys at the time, and you two, and it just felt right. So the band became December. And it's well worth a listen to the Waterboys December. It's just full of poetry and emotion. And it's like a folk punk anthem, and it's wonderful.
Awesome. Okay, on that note, we will see you again next time. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. If you were...